Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Libion podcast. My name is Jacqueline, and I am back with Dr. V continuing his Living Missional series. This is episode 8. So if you have not heard the other ones, I highly recommend you go back and listen to them all. They are fantastic. But before we dive into what this episode is about, Dad, would you mind telling me kind of what your mentality behind this series was? Why did you want to start this series?
That's a great question. I really appreciate you having me on today. This is going to be fantastic. You know, the idea of living missionally, I think, is just a wonderful idea for a Christian to think about. And it's easy we're missionaries, long-term missionaries. It's easy for us to live in a way that is missional because that's what we're surrounded with. But how do you do that in your own culture? You know, when you're out in a different culture, it really is a lot more clear, you know, what there is to do. So this is a series that we really wanted to answer that question, is how do you live out the Great Commission? How do you live out the gospel of Jesus Christ in your own culture? And we're calling that living missionally.
Well, and I think that's such a great concept too, because, you know, one of the best pieces of advice that you gave me before I moved down to Haiti to be a long-term missionary was, what are you doing stateside to prepare yourself to go? If you can't do it in the States, then why do you think you can do it in Haiti? So I think this is such a practical guide on, hey, if you really feel like it's on your heart to go and do long-term missions, then, you know, here's a great way to do it wherever you are. And so I like this series. I think it's a great one.
So. Well, that's great.
So what are we going to be talking about today?
Well, today I think we're going to talk about something that is just very foundational to the idea of living on a mission or living missionally, and that is to develop a love for the lost. Mm-hmm. You know, that's sort of sounds like it would be completely understood. It would be just foundational. And it is in a lot of ways. But I think that a lot of people have never really grasped the idea of how much God loved them in their lost state, before they became Christians, that God loved them so much that he just went above and beyond to retrieve these people from their lost state into a saved state. And that needs to pass on to us, because it's a dirty business. It's difficult. You're getting into the lives of people, and you may not be comfortable with their lifestyle. It may be something that's completely out of your comfort zone. But loving the people who are lost is absolutely crucial to being able to live missionally, meaning the Great Commission, to go into all the world and preach the gospel. And that's the foundation of what we're talking about.
That's good. Okay, so what do we need to learn first about God's love for us before we can share God's love for others to others?
Well, that's a great question. You know, God it's so amazing to me. It's awe-inspiring. It's just beyond words to think about how much the Father loves us. You know, not too long ago, he really showed me something that obviously is very foundational, very, very easy to understand, but I had never really grasped. And that was that when God the Father designed the world and the entire universe, he did it for one reason. And that was so that he could have a place to commune with us. He wanted to create a place that he could have mankind together with him, and we could do the work of the Father. So all those stars you see twinkling in the sky, you know, and the planets, and when you see, you know, the meteors and the going by, all those things, he created that just so that we could be together with him. That's an amazing proposition. You know, the Garden of Eden, you know, when you read the first couple of chapters of Genesis, God is fashioning this stuff. I mean, he's planned for this. And of course, I don't want to humanize the Father, but for us to understand it, we sort of have to put him in human terms, which is woefully inadequate, I mean, obviously. But to put it sort of in a human terms, thinking about him, you know, thinking in advance, okay, you know, what can I do here? How can I fashion the earth that it'll be perfect for mankind, that men and women will love being on the earth? It's going to have the right amount of oxygen for them to breathe. It can't have toxic, you know, gases that are going to hurt them. You know, it needs to have enough gravity to where they don't fly off into outer space. They get to stay put, you know, but not too much, or they're all going to be sort of flat. You know, so he designed this, I mean, with so much forethought. Now, I'm not trying to imply that it was a stress to him. Obviously, nothing is. But just putting it in human terms, if we were creating a place for somebody, you know, it would just be the same kind of metaphor as what God did to prepare for us. So everything about the earth is absolutely perfect for us. Now, you know, the humanists and the evolutionists believe that that was already there, and then we just sort of crawled out of the primordial soup or something. Obviously, as Christians, we don't think that. We believe that God created this just for us, and then he created Adam. Then he says, you know, Adam, he gets to name all of the animals. He's in charge of the animals and the plants. But he wants to find a helpmeet for him, is what he says, a friend, basically. And Adam couldn't find one among the animals. And so God created a woman for Adam, out of Adam's rib. An amazing story. Again, creating the perfect person for Adam. And for those of us, you know, who are married, understanding that our spouse is created very similarly. Obviously, we don't give up a rib or something, but but that spouse is created by God to be perfect for us for life. And so when we take that analogy, and I love to think of the analogy, even though it's sort of a dated one, you know, of a man who wants to get married and he wants to have a family, and he finds a woman, she's a beautiful woman, and they want to get married together, and so they need a house. And so he lovingly buys land, and he starts building the house himself, and he designs it with her in mind. He's thinking, you know, I know she loves the color yellow, and so we're going to paint the rooms yellow. And I know that she loves porches, and so we're going to have porches, and we're going to have porch swings. And so, you know, everything that he designs into that house, he's thinking about her. The kitchen, she loves to cook, and so we're going to have this appliance, and we're going to have this kind of countertop. And all of those things he's thinking about for her so that she will be in a perfect place to live. He works every day on the house. You know, he builds it, he gets it just perfect, and then they're married. He brings her into the house, and it's a wonderful gift. That's a lot like what God did for us. He created this earth. He made it absolutely perfect. You know, the description of the garden, you know, was that he created trees that were both beautiful to look at and full of fruit that the man and woman could eat. It even says that he created rivers that flowed from the garden. So he watered the plants with these rivers. There was no evidence that it was raining at that time. And so they needed water. And there were four rivers that he created. Again, all of this preparation, all of this forethought, all of this planning to make a place that's absolutely perfect for us. but then something happened. You know, we sinned. The man and the woman believed Satan, believed the lie of Satan, took a bite of the fruit that gave them, you know, the understanding of good and evil, and they fell. So now all of this preparation, all of this idea that God was going to be able to walk in the garden with Adam and Eve, that they would walk together, that they would, you know, they would enjoy each other's company. All of a sudden, something happened that divided that, and that company could no longer be had because there was sin in the world. And it would be a lot like our analogy of the man, that he brings this woman home and, you know, having planned it just for her and for them together, and she rejects it and she runs off and, you know, runs off with somebody else. That's a lot like what we did as humankind. You know, it'd be pretty easy to be bitter about that. You know, if you did all this work, you created this wonderful house, this wonderful environment, and then your loved one just completely rejects it and runs off with somebody else. That's pretty much what happened. But instead of being bitter about it, God had a plan. He had a redemption plan. And it was going to take thousands of years for it to be implemented. And so it's not like he had to have a backup plan. I don't mean to imply that. He knew in advance what we were going to do. We were going to sin. He knew that. But he had such love for us that he was willing to have this plan in place for thousands of years. But then the details of the plan are just heartbreaking in that it involved killing, sacrificing a perfect human. That basically is what it required, was that God, the only one who's perfect, had to sacrifice his son. So you just think about that. Here we just willingly rejected God's plan. We just said, you know what? I want more than this. This isn't enough. I want to have everything, and I'm going to reject this. Mm-hmm. And instead of just wiping us out and starting over, which, you know, arguably would have been something that probably I would
it's
have
what
done.
I would do.
Right? You know, instead of doing that, he says, no, I love these people, and we're going to make this work. And so now he has Jesus, and Jesus, as the perfect sacrifice, has to die. Now think about that. Here was the pain of being rejected. And again, I'm humanizing God. But the pain that we rejected God, and now he has the pain of having to have his son leave heaven. So here was his son. They're in heaven together. They have a perfect relationship. They have perfect friendship. They're walking together in security, in ultimate wealth. And then Jesus has to leave. Jesus has to go to the place that the Father parted from because of sin. So there's pain there. There's just this intense pain of separation that Jesus and the Father felt. Then think about the sacrifice that Jesus made. You know, one of my favorite scriptures is 2 Corinthians 8:9, and it describes Jesus in a way that is just so perfect. Here Jesus left heaven, perfect security. Nobody could hurt Jesus in heaven, right? I mean, there was absolutely nothing negative that could happen to him there. He had ultimate security. Golden gates, you know, pearly gates, golden streets, all that kind of stuff. But he left, and he didn't come down here and live as a wealthy person, right? In 2 Corinthians 8, it says, "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ. Though he was rich," he was, all the wealth in the universe and beyond, "for your sake he became poor." So now here is Jesus in heaven with the ultimate wealth, leaving that and coming down to earth and living as a poor man. And that's what he did. Like it or not, that's exactly what he did, was he lived as a poor man. And then the 2 Corinthians 8, 9 continues. He says, so that by his poverty, you may become rich. So as we attain to salvation and we join the Father again, we enjoy the wealth of the Father. But that pain of separation, that pain of living as a poor man, now we keep going and we look at Jesus' final days and we look at the torture that he endured. We look at how he was maligned and he was spat upon and he was jeered at, made fun of. And then he was whipped, and the absolutely horrible torture of being whipped just for us. Just because we rejected God, he did that. So then he obviously went to the cross, and nails were put through his hands and feet, and he suffered on the cross for hours and hours just because of us. And he endured the cross for the joy set before him. And so the joy set before him was us, that the lost people who now were able to regain that oneness with the Father because of what Jesus endured. And so Jesus has the pain, the physical pain, but you know, a lot of people have physical pain. I think the real pain that Jesus felt was that sin, my sin, the sin of the world, all came upon Jesus. And the excruciating pain, I think that was the pain that he was praying about in the garden, that he didn't want to endure. The physical pain, lots of people have endured that, right? But the pain of a sinless God taking the sins of the world, all the awful, all the dirty, all the obnoxious and filthy sin that everyone in the world had committed, he took that on himself. And that had to been absolutely excruciating, so much so that the Father turned his face away from Jesus, that he looked away because he couldn't stand to see his Son, God, covered in the sin, the filth, and the slime of us. So here's Jesus enduring all of this just so we could be restored to the Father. Isn't that an amazing thought? But he goes further. You know, he dies. And it says he descends and he preaches to the captives in hell and he leads captives out of hell. So he actually went down to preach to those in hell so that they could be liberated. He actually had to go to hell because he had sin on him, right? But the first death he experienced, but he protected us from the second death, and that is the eternity in hell. So he broke free, broke from hell. The only one who's ever done that, the only one that had that ability to do that, broke out of hell, spent time on the earth, and then ascended to his Father. So I say all of that just as a backdrop to how we can have love for the lost. And so when we're looking at love for the lost, we need to put it in those terms. Those are pretty high terms, aren't they? That's a pretty difficult thing to even have any idea about. But when we have love for people who are lost, thinking about how God had love for us, even though we were lost, I think really helps us understand what that love should look like. You know, one of the things I think is a good thing to do is look at the opposite and see what that love is not supposed to look like, right? And so I'd sort of like to start with that. You know, the love that that we are supposed to have for the lost is not supposed to look like just talk, right? If Jesus had just talked, what if he'd just come down to earth and talked, but then when the going got rough, he said, I'm out, right? He could have. I mean, he had those options available to him. So, you know, many times today, we sort of pretend, right? And there'll be some oppressed people group that's going through something terrible, and we'll just say, oh, that's, you know, that's just so hard. We'll think about that. Well, what good does that do, right? Does that ever relieve anybody's oppression? And the Bible even talks about that. You know, don't say, go be ye warmed and filled when somebody's hungry. How does that help? And today there's a lot of talk. There is just an awful lot of talk about, you know, helping the lost or helping people who are oppressed. Maybe they're hungry. Maybe they don't have clothes. Maybe they're thirsty. The Bible is all about action, right? And so if we're just talking and we're not doing, then that's not what the love of God looked like, the example that he set for us. You know, getting out of our comfort zone. You know, Jesus was sort of the ultimate someone who got out of his comfort zone, right? Here he was in heaven. You know, he's up there, pearly gates, golden streets. I mean, everything's perfect. He's got his angel friends up there, and he's got his father, and everything's perfect. And he leaves and becomes a poor man and lives on the earth. That's getting out of your comfort zone. Now, I'm not saying Jesus can't do that. He's God, so he can do anything. That would be a pretty big departure from my comfort zone if it were me. So I think developing a love for the lost means we've got to get out of our comfort zone. We can't stay. You know, so many of us just stay and talk, you know, and that's just not what it's about. It's about leaving, and it's about having action. You know, we have a lot of emojis today. I see that one of the new iPhone updates is going to increase the number of emojis. I'm not a big emoji guy, I guess, but I don't need any more emojis, I don't think. So maybe I do, and I just don't know it. But, you know, the love...
You just
love,
haven't unlocked the potential yet.
That's right. I've got my own one little emoji that I have. But, you know, that's not love. It's cute. It's cute. It's fun. We can put a little smiley face or whatever. Mine has a smiley face with sunglasses on it, so it's, at least it's cool. But, you know, we can do that, but that's not love, you know? That's just being cute, and that's fine, but we can't call it love, you know? We need to call it for what it is. So what does it look like? You know, Jesus gave up everything. He gave up his relationship with the Father. He gave up his riches. He gave up his security. And he knew all that in advance. You know, he knew what was coming. And he gave that up so that we might experience the love of God. So I think that's the first thing that developing love for the lost looks like, is that you give up your riches, you give up your stuff, and you do that so that others can become rich. You know, it's easy, you know, and we like to make metaphors out of things so that they're not real. You know, we can just sort of make a metaphor out of it, you know. And with this, I think we sort of get metaphorical here, but, you know, it's just not metaphorical. If you want to, if the scripture is saying that you become poor so that others may become rich, there's a wealth transfer taking place. You know, I know that's not a very nice term to talk about today, but that's what it is. Jesus transferred his wealth, his ultimate wealth, and became ultimately poor. For us to show love, to develop love for the lost, that's the same thing. You know, if people at Live Beyond Base are eating food that we are giving them, making available for them, somebody had to transfer wealth from their account to that account. And that's a lot of what the economy of the kingdom of God is like. There's a wealth transfer that takes place, and becoming poor so that others may become wealthy is, I think, a basic tenet. You know, when we talk about love, you know, a lot of times we're talking about, you know, just sending little emojis like we were laughing about earlier. But, you know, Jesus says, no one has greater love than this, that someone would lay down his life for his friends. That's a big deal. It's exactly what Jesus did. And if we as Christians believe that Jesus was our perfect example, and I think it's probably appropriate there, that we need to lay our lives down for those who are lost. You know, there's a big difference in saying I'm willing to die for something and to say I'm dying willingly, right? Willing to die, may happen, may not happen, sort of wishing it doesn't happen, but, you know, that's something in the future. Dying willingly, you've already started the process, right? You're already starting to die. So if we're laying down our life for our friends, we're dying willingly for our friends. That's a big deal. That's a really big deal. And it allows us to develop love for the loss. You know, Jesus said in Matthew 16, if anyone wants to come with me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it. For whoever loses his life, because of me will find it. And that's a basic tenet of developing love for the lost. We must deny ourselves. We deny ourselves food. We deny ourselves vacations. We deny ourselves a new car. We deny ourselves things. And we take up our cross. The cross is a symbol of our death, right? And if we're carrying our cross every day, that means we're dying willingly for the lost.
I think that's wonderful. And knowing that sacrifice is essential. And then I love how you brought up John 15, where it says laying down your life for your friends. You know, that doesn't mean that you have to see people as your friends. You know, I love that. And you always taught this in Haiti, was you have to know their name. When you go down there and you learn their name and you see where they live and you see their circumstances and you get to know them and you love them, that changes everything. You know, that completely is a perspective shift. And, you know, considering them your friends and then willing to sacrifice, have that wealth transfer so that your friends can live and be successful and have enough food in their bellies and be able to go to school and, you know, live a productive life. You know, absolutely. I 100% agree with this, and I'm grateful because the way that you taught this today was putting the emotion back into the story of the gospel, and not just as the recipient of hearing the gospel, you know, your emotions towards hearing it, but getting to see truly how much God loves us, that he did all of that. And, you know, that was just a perspective that I've never heard taught before. And I really, really loved it. So thank you. I thought that was absolutely incredible.
Well, I'm thank you so much. You know, it's just truly amazing when we think about what God did to restore us. And I think, you know, in my journey, you know, of being a successful surgeon in the United States and then working overseas and in different African countries and then Haiti, you know, the thing that really crystallized for me was that how can I live as a king? How can I have a new car? I have a good house. The roof doesn't leak. I've got all these things. When people I know are starving, and I couldn't handle that. That was sort of the thing that broke me, broke my heart for the poor. And obviously, that is what we're called to is the poor. But that was the question that I could not get past was, why is it I get to live well? Why do I have the best education, the best of everything, and yet there are people, you know, that are in our backyard who are suffering and dying because they don't have enough to eat, because they don't have clean water. Their moms dying in childbirth because they just don't have the basic necessities to give them a good life. And yet I have them in abundance. And I could not handle that disparity. That right there was what absolutely broke my heart for the lives of the poor and really completely redirected my my life purpose for helping the poor achieve a better life.
Well, before we wrap up, we got to talk about it. You wrote a book, and it's really, really, really good. And so would you mind telling us a little bit about your book?
Absolutely. That, you know, we wrote a book. We had a lot of people asking us about our story and again, how we got from, you know, living a life as a successful surgeon to moving to the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere and building a base of operations and taking care of the poor. And so this is what this book is about, is that journey and the stories that God used to change our hearts from it being all about me to it not being about me. That was a big shift, for at least for me. And so we wrote this book. It's called Live Beyond, A Radical Call to Surrender and Serve. And it details our story. And so it was it's available on Amazon. And so you can go to Amazon, you can go to our website, that's www.livebeyond.org, and you can buy the book. And please do tell me how you like it. Give us some feedback on the book. We'd love to engage with you and hear your thoughts.
Absolutely. And if you would like to leave a review, if you would please consider leaving it at Amazon, Goodreads, or BookBub, that would be very helpful for us and to hopefully have this book in the hands of even more people. So if you would please consider doing that. But that is it for this week. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. This is lesson 8 on our Living Missional series. Next week, we will continue with episode 9, and it will be about developing the attitude of rejoicing when you are persecuted. And I know that that is a lesson that hits very close to home for you, Dad. So I am anxiously awaiting that one. So please come in and check that one out when we release it. But if you are interested in learning more about Live Beyond, you can go online to livebeyond.org. You can check out all the incredible things that the Lord is doing in Haiti and how we are getting to be a part of them. If you feel like it is on your heart to donate, you can press that Give Now button and check out our maternal health and our child nutrition programs. But we hope you have a fantastic day and week, and don't forget to go out and live beyond.